Good morning and welcome. Welcome to the Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, a program brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida, and a live medical call-in talk show. Phone lines are now open if you have calls about the questions that come up during the course of the program or comments that you'd like to share. Those numbers are 941-206-1580 and 888-441-1580. And now here's your host of the show, Dr. Elizabeth Triana. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. And we are another beautiful day here. And today, and yes, I am Dr. Elizabeth Triana from the Triana Prevention Center. Preventing what? What are we trying to prevent? We're trying to prevent heart attack, stroke, diabetes. We're trying to keep you healthy. So if this is the first time you listen to our program, my mission is to help people to understand more about their health and open up the dialogue, the conversation, so you can say, wow, I heard that. Dr. Triana talked about that on her show. Wow, that really made a difference in my life. Last week, we had Dr. Katzen, which I want to thank, from Southwest Florida Regional Imaging Center. We talked about a groundbreaking recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force that this is to help detect early detection of lung cancer. So I'm going to recap. If you have been a 30-pack year a day smoker, which means you have smoked cigarettes every day for the past 30 years, you are considered high risk. Even if you quit smoking 15 years ago, you are considered high risk. If you smoked for 15 years, two packs a day, that's still a 30-pack-a-day smoker. The recommendation is for early detection of lung cancer is a CAT scan. A CAT scan of your lungs, which would take less than 15 minutes, no injections, a simple procedure, which at the Imaging Center at Southwest Florida, you can call for cash-paying patients, it's $200. Now you think about that. Wait a minute, $200. Has anybody bought a plane ticket anywhere? I don't know. Plane tickets are way more expensive than $200. You could save your life for less than what it costs to get a plane ticket. How about women getting their nails done? $45 a pop. Save your money. You can get your lungs checked. So I want everybody to understand this is a lifesaver. This is not, eventually insurance will cover it, but at this point in life, it is, this is for asymptomatic people. So bring this up with your doctor. If you don't have a physician, get a family physician. Yes, I am accepting new patients. Yes, if you need, my office is 941-625-1990.
I think it would be neat to go through the mathematics again, because last week was the first time I heard the expression pack years, and I wasn't sure what that meant as far as pack years go.
Okay. If you smoke every day for 30 years, that's 30 pack years. Okay, so you've been doing it for 30 years, one pack a day. If you only smoked for 15 years, two packs a day, well, 2 times 15 is 30. That's 30 pack years. So this is depending on how long you're a smoker, how much you smoked. But remember, even if you quit within 15 years, you are at high risk. So this is very important for people to understand. I think it's something that needs to be brought up. You need to talk to your physician. If you don't have a physician, get a physician. If you're still smoking, now, I want everyone to be very, very clear about this. The best way to prevent lung cancer is not to smoke.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a given, okay? But we also know, like, we help our patients to quit smoking. And there's different ways to help patients, being supportive, there's medications such as Shantex or an antidepressant called Wellbutrin. There are the patches. There's a gum, a nicotine gum, a lozenger. There's a lot that can be done. But it's like every addiction. You're going to need, it's always easier to buddy up, as I say. Get someone to help you quit.
So, now, for example, if a husband and wife have been smoking for many years together, it might be advantageous for them to choose to kind of be each other's accountability partner. I'm thinking specifically of some family members of mine in particular, to be honest with you.
Right. It is, you know, most helpful to do that. I'm not here, when patients come to see me, I'm not here to judge. I'm here to help. I'm here to help. I speak about the latest information, medical information. I counsel my patients. I listen to them. I tell my patients, you are my book. I'm reading you. I'm listening to you. So today we have a very, very important topic that I want everyone to listen to. And if you have any questions, again, you can call 206-1580. I want to have a program that people feel comfortable, very comfortable, and open up a dialogue, a conversation, and give everyone the latest information. The topic today, and this is a very important topic, it will take up two shows. I know it will.
Okay.
And it is sex and your heart.
Okay. I saw that on Facebook the other day, and
yes.
It opened up a world of thoughts to me.
Sex in your heart. And it is based on the American Heart Association, and the European Heart Association got together and published a consensus statement. Now, if you want to go to their website, you're welcome to. It's a 23-page statement.
Wow.
But I'm breaking it down.
Thank you.
And making it simpler for everyone to understand. The topic, it's sexual counseling for individuals with cardiovascular disease and their partners.
Gotcha.
So this is very important. Okay. First of all, let's talk about sexual health. What is sexual health? Sexual health is very important for every human being. It is part of having a pleasurable experience and a safe sexual experience. This is very important. It's an important part of a relationship. It's an important part of marriage. And unfortunately, many, many people are scared to talk about it.
Mm.
They are embarrassed. If they've had a heart attack or any other major illness, they don't want to talk about it. They get embarrassed. Many people have fear. They fear, like, if they have a major illness, either, for example, a cardiac event like a heart attack or congestive heart failure, or they've had bypass surgery, or they've had a heart transplant, or they've had a pacemaker put in. A lot of patients and their partners are either, they're scared to talk about it. They're scared to talk about their sexual life. They feel that maybe they're not good enough to have sex. Or they're scared if they have sex or sexual activities that they are going to have another event.
With regard to being scared or embarrassed to talk about it with your physician, what I hear you saying is your sexual health is just another component of your overall health. So if you feel comfortable talking with your doctor about, say, a pain in my shoulder, I can be just as comfortable talking about sexual issues.
Yes, and you should be able to. And part of this consensus statement is to help healthcare providers open up the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Open up the conversation. Ask the question. For example, everyone, you know, you hear the word sex. Wow, everybody's eyes. Bingo, my eyes open up. Because it's important. It's a wonderful feeling to be able to share with another human being. It's a wonderful feeling to be loved, to have intention, acceptance. It's a pleasurable experience. There's so much involved, the chemistry. But guess what? It's really good for your health. And it's important. So if people are not talking about it, if someone is scared, and you know, many times when a couple or a person feels that they're not adequate enough mm-hmm. for sexual function, that can lead to anxiety, depression, and believe it or not, you are going to be more at risk for other diseases.
Really?
There is a study that shows the correlation between people who have orgasms living longer than those who do not. Now, yes, I said the word, and I want everyone to know that this is very important. We need to be aware that this is a part of your health, your mental health, your physical health, your sexual health. We are a total person. So why is this so important? We also know that men who have vascular disease have twice as high as the general population, they can have erectile dysfunction, also called ED. That this erectile dysfunction, which we have spoken about before, can be that little red flag way before you get your heart attack, way before you get your chest pain. It can be a red flag of vascular disease. Now, many young patients who have high risk, who are smokers, have other risk factors, high blood pressure, diabetes, who are overweight, can experience erectile dysfunction way before they get their first heart symptom like chest pain or a heart attack.
So ED may, in a sense, be a telescope that shows us a problem down the road.
Right. It is a forewarning. So this is very important to talk about to your doctor. Also, and you know, as I said, I counsel my patients, and we speak about this because it's an important part of your health. Now, in women also, sexual dysfunction, vaginal dryness, can also precede any other symptoms. And this is something that the studies have shown, that most of the patients, not just the patients, but the partners of the patients, because remember, this affects your partner too, they both don't want to speak about it, or they may be embarrassed.
Okay.
So what are we looking at? What kind of cardiac events? Again, as we had said, having a heart attack, having a stroke, doesn't mean you can't have sex again. Please, I want everyone to listen to this. Changes in function, many people before they get a major event may have vascular disease, they might have angina, they might have an implantable cardioverter, mm-hmm. which this is another thing. This is a pacemaker that's implanted that if the heart goes out of rhythm, it will shock the heart. That is not going to, if that should happen, and we will talk about it, during a sexual activity, that is not going to hurt your partner. People who have congestive heart failure or who have had bypass surgery. So, I have said this before, I will say it again. And if anyone wants to talk about this, please, an intimate life should be a forever life. Getting older doesn't mean you have no more, or that your intimate life is gone. And this discussion should not be limited to just people who have an acute event. So, what is very important is the role of intimacy before sexual activity, which is very important. You know, they had a thing today. I saw that on the Today Show. They did a survey. They said 60% of couples do not sleep in the same room. 60% of couples. Now, they didn't give an age, but you know what? How are you going to have an intimate life? It's harder if that person is in another room.
So it can be done, but you're right. You're right. It's easier to be together.
Okay. A lot of, you know, people sleep in other rooms because maybe your partner snores, or some people are on machines because they have sleep apnea. But 60%, I think more needs to be known about this, more research about that, because I feel that to me, that's sad if 60% of couples are not together. So I think we need to work on it.
Definitely.
So what do we need to talk about to gain confidence after an event? We're going to talk about today ways to gain confidence. Kissing, touching, holding hands. What about date night, massage? We're going to talk about positions for sexual activity, which are very important as some people get older and are not able to do certain positions. The use of foreplay, the use of medications to enhance sexual performance and also enhance the intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems that a lot of patients don't want to bring up this topic with their healthcare provider is they may be embarrassed because their provider may be a different gender than they are, or cultural differences. So all this needs to be taken into account. I want everyone to know that the counseling includes a review of your medications and potential effects on sexual function. So, and any risk related to sexual activity. Also, we know, research has shown, if you get up and go, if you exercise, then you are going to increase your intimate life. You know, that sounds pretty simple.
It does.
It increases your intimate life. That the use of sexual activities that require less energy, that remember now, sexual activities to bridge, for example, after someone has a heart attack, to bridge that to sexual intercourse needs to be, we need to remind people of what those activities are, the hugging, the touching, the kissing, and that if a couple starts with those little simple activities, it will bridge and make them feel more comfortable and less scared of some event happening while they're having sex.
So in a sense, after a major health event, there's a little bit of a relearning curve, kind of take it slowly up the ramp, and that'll lead to more comfort ultimately when you get there.
Right. Because we know that it's very important that you start with an intimate, in other words, start with the simple and build up, mm-hmm. which also that's called foreplay, but the beginning to start get things going.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's very important. Men and women, as we know, think a little differently. I think everybody here agrees with that. Aren't we all a little,
all
different.
All the stories I could tell.
Okay. So men, when they express dissatisfaction with their sexual health, it's usually one of the first things that they feel when they advance to their partner, they get rejected. That is a major issue for men. Problems with arousal. Remember, certain medications, we're going to talk about those medicines, can affect your erectile dysfunction, your arousal. Certain also problems like erectile dysfunction, some patients don't want to even attempt because they feel that they are going to be rejected. Or even low self-esteem. We know that low self-esteem affects our everyday life. Now, women feel their sexual satisfaction differently. They relate it more often to a conflict with a relationship. If there's a major conflict in the relationship, the woman may not feel sexual or be interested. Also, many women, as they get older, as we know, we've talked about, because I'm a menopause specialist. I have my certification in menopause. Many women, because as they get older, the lack of estrogen, they can get vaginal dryness, they can get changes in their genital area, they can get hair loss, dry skin, decreased libido, and they're afraid of lack of orgasm. So this is very important. Men have their feelings. Women have their feelings on how they react. I think the important thing is that both talk and express their feelings, their wants, their needs in a comfortable environment. You don't do the dialogue when you're in the middle of the action. You plan the action ahead of time, whatever that action. And, you know, I say action. And I mean, you could be holding hands, going to a movie, kissing, just sleeping next to each other, holding each other. You don't, you know, all this is intimacy. It all leads up and it makes you feel more connected with your partner. Doesn't everybody want to feel that somebody really thinks they're special and loved and connected?
But you're right. Timing is everything with that conversation. And you said something interesting a moment ago about planning the action. And then you went to define the action. I think we got that. But as far as the planning part goes, there's something to be said about spontaneity, but there's something to be said about planned spontaneity and choosing your timing.
You know, having a night, two nights, three nights, whatever, where you plan with your partner, and even if that partner, and I'm going to talk about even if that partner's on oxygen, even if that partner had a heart attack, we're going to go into each individual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. When you are starting, you've got to remember this is an important part of life. But I think part of the problem is that if a couple has not continued the intimate life, and then there's a major event like a heart attack, a stroke, or bypass surgery, it's harder to reconnect. Mm-hmm. So what I'm talking about is important for everyone at every age. Everyone at every age to connect with their partner, to connect with their loved one, to continue the intimate life. I have patients who tell me, you know, my husband, he can't have sex. We don't do anything. I said, well, why not? And this is what we're bringing up today. Because there is a plan. There is research out there. There is a way to reignite and keep your intimate life going. You got to think about it. You can't just say, okay, we're not 21 anymore. It's not like in the movies. We're not going to have fireworks, bang, you know, fireworks every time as you see in the movies. It doesn't happen that way, but it can happen in a beautiful way. So, and you can still have fireworks. It's just that we're different. We're older. This is the thing. Society needs to, some people in society think, oh my gosh, they're old. They don't need to have sex. They don't need intimacy. That is not true. That is not true. And I hope everybody's listening. I don't see many callers right now, but that's okay. I know you're listening. Every one of you, listen, this is very important. You can resume. In other words, having a major health event does not say, that's it. No more sex, no more intimacy. That is wrong. I want everyone to understand that. This is not going to be a barrier. You might have to change the way you did things, but it's not going to be a barrier. So one of the things that partners in counseling, we talk about, number one, is severity of disease, okay? We need to redefine sexual health in terms of people are scared of having a sexual activity because they feel, like I said, oh my God, I'm going to have another heart attack. Or what if my pacemaker stops working? What if my heart stops? Okay. The fear of having an orgasm after a cardiac event. People are scared. They feel, oh my goodness, my heart rate goes up. I breathe a little harder. I get a little flushed. It's okay. And we're going to talk about when is it okay? When is it okay?
Let's take a quick break here from the action. If for no other reason, just to gather our thoughts. And let me remind you that this is a live medical talk show and you're invited to participate. Now, I know this morning's subject might be a little on the intimidating side for you to open up, but that, after all, is one of the main messages the doctor has conveyed to us so far. It's important to communicate about sexual issues. So if you would like to have a conversation, no names, completely anonymous, you're welcome to call 206-1580 or 888-441-1580. Otherwise, sit back, relax, and continue to enjoy the program. As always, the program is brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida, with a new website, a recently revamped website that you can visit, TrianaPreventionCenter.com, T-R-I-A-N-A, Prevention Center, all one word, .com. And now, let's go back to Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And we're discussing a very important topic for your health. Yes, sex in your heart. And this is really important. We are basing this on a consensus statement put out by the American Heart Association. We're talking about sex because it is a part of your life, a part of your partner's life.
When you say consensus statement, does that mean that the majority of the medical professionals contributing to the report all agree?
Yes.
I'm just trying to make sure I get the terminology correct.
They base this on studies, and they put out recommendations for healthcare providers, such as doctors and nurses, on how to counsel, what to bring up with their patients about having sexual relations after a cardiac event, or if they have had a stroke or bypass surgery. And the important part, again, that I'm bringing up today is to open up the dialogue. The biggest fear that patients have is if they engage in sexual activities that they are going to have a heart attack or stroke again. But we have to put that into perspective. You have to look at, first of all, what is the energy consumption? When you have sex, how much energy is expended? Well, the recommendation is if you can do a stress test, if you can walk on a treadmill for what's called 3 to 5 minutes, that's a unit of work. If you can walk on a treadmill, you and or up 2 flights of stairs or a 6-minute walk test without any chest pains, without any changes on your electrocardiogram, then you can have sex. So we know what is measured. A met is a unit of energy that's used when you're on a treadmill. Okay, before you have an orgasm, you're using between 3 and 4 mets. 2 to 3 mets. If you're having an orgasm, yes, the energy goes up. It's between 2 and 4 mets. But what we need, 3 and 4 mets, what we need to discuss is that sex involves not just the energy to have the sex, but it is a state of arousal. We need to separate that out. Because the state of arousal, what happens? The heart rate goes up. The pulse, right, goes up, which is your heart rate. Mm-hmm. Your blood pressure goes up. Your breathing gets a little more rapid.
Respiration goes up.
You get maybe a little sweaty. Okay. But the real energy is not just from the arousal, but it's from the physical exertion of having sex. That is where more energy. So remember we were talking about what are things you could do before you start having intercourse?
Yes.
To bridge the gap there, the kissing, the holding hands, the foreplay, the arousal. Well, that is the beginning, and that is the safest way to start to see how does your body respond first before you go ahead and have sexual intercourse. So I'm trying to keep it as clear as possible. We know that the energy that you spend is not as great as you think, except for certain patients and also in certain positions, which we're going to talk about. We know that medications can also affect certain medicines that people use, such as beta blockers, diuretics, antidepressants, can affect, in some patients, erectile dysfunction. It can lead to impaired ejaculation or decreased libido. In some studies, you know, this is still the patients, not everyone is affected by this. I want everyone out there to know that if you have problems with your medications, do not stop your medications until you speak with your doctor.
You're talking about some pretty common medications, sort of like the pharmaceutical hit parade there, if you will. So this is something that a lot of people perhaps have been, like you said, embarrassed or shy to discuss. This is a natural conversation you can have with your physician. Doctor, are any of my prescriptions perhaps responsible for what I'm feeling sexually?
Right.
Definitely talk about it.
You need to talk about this. This is another thing that needs to be brought up. But don't stop your medicines.
No.
A person who has cardiac disease, who has high blood pressure, or who's had a heart attack, don't stop your medications until you speak to your doctor. So, what are those medications that are very important? For example, many patients we know are using medications such as Viagra. These are medicines that vasodilate, which open up the blood vessels so that a man can have an erection. We know that you cannot use Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, they're all in the same class of medication, mm-hmm. with nitroglycerin, because nitroglycerin will decrease your blood pressure when you take this with these medicines. So we're going to talk about if you are having sex and you get chest pains and you have had a history of a heart attack, you're on taking Viagra, you need to get a hold of an emergency medical service, okay? And we're going to talk about when you call someone, when you don't. This is a very detailed conversation where every step is important.
All right.
We're going to start off with, first of all, the environment for sexual activity. That is very important for a couple. The environment. we know when someone has a major disease that a familiar surroundings is important. Being comfortable, have a good room temperature is important. And also having the same partner. This actually puts less stress on the heart. Very interesting. And I'm not making a judgment here. But there was a study that showed that men, now remember, sexual activity has a very low risk. Very low risk. But men who were having sex with an extramarital partner, it could be very risky.
I remember hearing that.
That 92.6% of deaths in this study occurred sudden death in men who were having extramarital intercourse. So the fear, the excitement of the unknown can raise your blood pressure more than usual, increase your heart rate. This is very important. Now, put this into perspective, though, that the risk overall is very low of sexual activity. It's less than a sudden burst of anger. It's less than the risk than unaccustomed physical exertion. So I want everyone to put that into perspective.
Yes, please.
But the environment is important. So this is very important. We talked about the energy consumption. How much energy is used? Not as much energy, especially if we look at different positions for sex. We looked at the state of arousal, the separation between being aroused, having an orgasm, doesn't expend the energy unless you are physically moving your body. That's very important. The recommendation is, overall, is that it's okay to have sex. It's okay to have sexual activity. And we're going to look at each diagnosis. Now, if a person who has vascular disease ends up having chest pains, shortness of breath, a rapid or irregular heart rate, dizziness, insomnia, major fatigue after having sex, that definitely needs to be reported to their doctor. When we talked about energy, we're talking about positions. What are the positions that are the safest? Well, the position that's most comfortable, the usual position that people, a couple had. We know that the missionary position, in other words, where one partner is on top of the other person, uses more energy. The person on top is going to be expending more energy, and that's very important that, you know, each couple is aware of that. Also, we know that for those people who do not have the strength, maybe to do the missionary style, there's other positions. There's positions where people can lay on their side, they can use pillows, they can see what they feel comfortable. Other thing is that if that patient has had bypass surgery, where they've had open heart surgery, they've opened up their chest, you really need to wait 6 to 8 weeks before you have sexual intercourse. Now, we're talking about, you know, the expending that energy. You could use pillows too, and that would help. We know also that the less energy is spent when each of the couple stimulates each other, arouses each other, or brings each other to orgasm, where you don't have to expend so much energy. So what's the bottom line here? The bottom line is that we can still be a sexual person with our partners, even though they may have a disability, such as a stroke, or they've had open heart surgery, or they've had a pacemaker placed. I think that's really, really important to open that conversation. I know a lot of people, again, and I will say, may be embarrassed. It's an important part of your life. It's an important part of your relationship to open this conversation up. Now, whether that couple be of a heterosexual or homosexual couple, we know that anal sex also can decrease the heart rate because any stimulation in that area can affect what we call the vagus nerve. So if someone already has a very slow heart rate because of medications, you might want to wait before having anal intercourse because you might notice that the blood pressure may drop and the heart rate may drop, and that will decrease what we call cardiac performance. What is cardiac performance? Well, the heart is a pump. It's got to pump blood. If it can't pump blood to your brain, you pass out. If it can't pump blood to its own vessels and its own muscles, you get chest pains. You get ischemia. The heart muscle needs oxygen. So you have to make sure after these events, when are you ready for sexual activity? So it's very important to look at what position you're having sexual activity. And again, if before your sexual life included a certain position and you feel comfortable doing it and you want to continue to do it, look to see. Don't give up. Including if you also engaged in anal sex, know that everything is still possible, but you might need to wait and build up to that point. So remember, if you are on medicines such as Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, which many people are using, you cannot take nitroglycerin. That's very, very important, because it will decrease your blood pressure.
Seems like one acts against the other, counterindicated or whatever they say.
If you're having sex and you get chest pains and you take your nitroglycerin and you're not using, now again, you need to discuss this. This program is to open up awareness and education. I'm not giving direct medical advice, because guess what? Each one of us is different. That's what's so wonderful about being a doctor. Each patient of mine is a different person. Each one is on different medicine. Each person has a different health history, a different family history, a different surgical history. That's what makes it so interesting. So I cannot say for each person that's listening to this program, if this happens, do this. I need to tell you, in this consensus statement, they are recommendations are, first of all, if you are on any of these medications, Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, and you get chest pains, you need to notify notify emergency medical services.
I'm sure somebody's asking right now, although perhaps too shy to call in and ask, you say if it doesn't go away, how long do I wait for it to go away?
Okay, their recommendations is, if you get chest pains and you have a vascular history, yes, like you've had a heart attack, mm-hmm, or bypass surgery, mm-hmm, and you're having activity and you're having sexual activity and you get chest pains and you're on one of these medicines, then you need to notify.
So you don't wait for it to go away, so to speak. You notify somebody right away.
You notify. Mm-hmm. If you're not on Viagra and these other medicines to increase, you know, your sexual performance, then they recommend to use nitroglycerin. Mm-hmm. But if after you take the nitroglycerin and you still have chest pain within 5 minutes, again, you need to notify emergency medical services.
Okay, good.
Okay, so when is it okay to resume sex? Again, we need to remind everybody to build up your confidence, start hugging, kissing, fondling, and working up to the sex. Now, if you can do a 6-minute walk where you don't get chest pain, if you can go up 2 flights of stairs and you have no chest pains or major shortness of breath, or you don't turn blue, or your blood pressure doesn't drop to the floor, then it's okay to have sex. Okay? So it's very important to your health, for your mental health, your sexual health, to have sex. Wow, that seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? It's very important because the studies show the frequency and the quality of sexual activity is going to impact your overall health. That is so important. There was a study that showed, again, and I will repeat this, that it decreased mortality by 50%. What does that mean? They had two groups, the group of men and women who had higher rate of orgasms lived longer than the people who have a lower rate of orgasm, a decreased frequency of orgasms. Now, I have patients who'd say to me, but Dr. Triana, I don't have a partner. It's okay to have an orgasm even if you don't have a partner. That is so important. I think people need to understand that self-stimulation can be a part of your sexual health. And that's important to bring up. Some patients, as they get older, think, well, I don't think about it. I don't really care about it. It can be a part of your sexual health. And it can be a part with your partner, too, to have stimulation. And it's very, very important. Why is it that people think that because they're alone, they cannot have a sexual life, too? You can. We talk about this. We talk about different things. We talk about toys. We talked about lubrication. And we can bring this up right now. My focus is that if you've had a major event, heart attack, stroke, bypass surgery, a stent, if you have had a pacemaker or a defibrillator, you can not say, well, you know, I had this happen, then I have no more sexual life. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about, yes, yes, you can have a sexual life. Yes, you can have a part of your life. It doesn't mean you have to give it up. Isn't that wonderful?
It's not only wonderful, but as you keep pointing out, it is important. But what I keep hearing also and resonates with me is how important it is to have these conversations with your doctor or medical professional. You're not going to shock a medical professional if you talk to them about specific positions or things that you used to enjoy and you fear you can't anymore. Nobody's going to fall over and faint away. You've heard it all. So you need to be able to communicate.
And I know last week we had like 6 callers and everything. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, people are shy about calling, but it's okay if you do have any questions, you can call. So we know, there's not enough time because we're going to go through every diagnosis, heart attack, stroke, when is it that you can have sex? After you've had bypass.
So this will be a 2-parter show to be continued next week.
Yes, okay. It's going to be continued. But the important thing to know is everyone out there, whether you've had a cardiac event or not, if you exercise every day, your sexual health will be better. We know that exercise even after a cardiac event. In other words, people who go through cardiac rehab, if they increase their capacity for exercise, they're going to have a better sexual life.
After a cardiac event, doesn't the doctor usually prescribe some kind of exercise regimen, even something mild?
Yes, okay. But if there is a lot of times patients are prescribed cardiac rehab, mm-hmm. and it, you know, they show you how to breathe, how to walk, what is the pain you have, how to respond to chest pains. So patients who go through a program of exercise and who are also watching what they eat, have weight loss, control their blood sugar, and yes, quit smoking will improve their sexual health. These are very important. These are the same things we talked about improving your heart health. So your sexual health and your heart are going together. This is so important. Everything you do to improve your sex life is going to improve your heart life.
And vice versa.
So you can't just say, oh, you've got to know exercise, weight loss, controlling your blood sugar, controlling your blood pressure, stopping smoking is going to impact not just now, but in the long run, your ability to have a great sex life. Wow. I think that's really great to look at it into that with that perspective. And I don't know anyone, if you talk to anybody and, you know, they really open up, everybody wants to have a good sex life. Is that not true? I think so. And everything you're doing for that is also good for your heart. That is so important.
It's the ultimate win-win.
Yes, the ultimate win-win. So we're going to talk about next week, after you've had a heart attack, when can you have sex? This has been a great program. I'm opening up the dialogue. I want everybody to know that I am accepting new patients. I'm Dr. Elizabeth Triana at the Triana Prevention Center. Think about any questions you might have for next week. We're going to go by diagnosis. We're going to talk about what is it that you can do to improve your sex life and your heart life.
Don't be shy. Next week, you call and you ask. You get some answers.
Okay. Well, I want everyone to stay healthy. We're looking here to have more good years, have a good sex life, and a good heart life. Thank you.